You're doing incredible work in your classroom and community. Isn't it time the world heard about it? Welcome to The Commons, a dedicated podcast channel on the Forward Ed Network, built specifically for educational professionals like you. We provide the platform at no cost. You bring the ideas and the passion. We provide the reach to share them with the field. Ready to start your broadcast? Ready to share your knowledge with others? Email us at admin@forwardednetwork.com and join the conversation today.
Welcome to The Commons on the Forward Ed Network. This is Modern Grading Reform, a mini-series with Dr. Chad Lang and Dr. Matt Townsley, sharing nearly 20 years in the trenches of grading and assessment reform. Let's get started.
Today's episode is brought to you by our partners at the Curriculum Leadership Institute. Let's be honest, curriculum and assessment work is hard. It's time-consuming, oftentimes disjointed, and if it's not done right, it doesn't actually improve student learning. CLI simplifies the process. They bring over 35 years of experience and are the trusted partner for districts that are committed to moving the mark. They partner with you and your staff and take the guesswork out of curriculum development. Stop guessing and start leading. Visit cliweb.org today.
Well, welcome to episode 4 of the Grading Reform 20 Years in the Trenches miniseries here. I'm Chad Lang, Matt Townsley with me as usual. Matt, thanks again for joining me for another awesome conversation coming up. How's it going?
Hey, good. Just feels like we've been at the proverbial fireplace having some fun fireside chats on a topic that we're really both excited, passionate about. And, you know, 20 years. Here we are putting it together and, you know, 4 episodes. Kind of sad. This is the final episode, Chad.
Yeah. It's almost like you have to kind of chuckle a little bit because, you know, you talk about 20 years or 2 decades and it sounds like a lot. And then you look at some of the research or even some of the seminal works that you and I have read. Like, what'd you get? You know, what's the copyright on that book? 1970s, 80s, possibly?
Yeah, 1970 something. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great one. If anybody hasn't, it's literally Get is the name of the book. WAD-JA-GET. I think Kirschenbaum is one of the authors. Just an awesome, really introduction to how long this work's been going on. So just as a precursor, as we've said in all the other episodes, Matt and I are grading and assessment enthusiasts. We certainly do a lot of work around supporting grading and assessment and in our own practice with colleagues, friends, and the like. We're not the one and only experts by any stretch of the imagination. And so when people say those things, it kind of makes me blush a little bit because this work's been going on for a long time. And we're just kind of standing on the shoulders of giants before us. So it's fun to get to do it. It's a passion area for us. We know it can make a significant difference when we can communicate clearly about what students can know or do and improve those practices in our schools. Benefits everybody. So we're on episode 4. So we're working through our own mini series here. We could obviously to do part 2 probably at some other time. But we have 4 episodes. Shout out to our sponsors, Spaces EDU, Curriculum Leadership Institute, great people over at Forward Ed for putting this together for us. It's been a really nice partnership with them. So check out their stuff if you want to learn more about what they do and how they can support curriculum, instruction, grading, and assessment. So thanks a lot for their partnership in this journey as well. Matt, this episode is going to focus on sustaining the work. And if it's hard enough to get it started and you're really thinking about all the efforts that school leaders or educators on this podcast have pondered, geez, it's a lot of hard work just to get started. What is going to be our thoughts on what has worked for sustaining the reform and kind of keeping that evolution of grading reform going in modern schools? What are your thoughts about that? Get us kicked off for this episode. What are some things that get us fired up?
Yeah, Chad, for every one school that reaches out with a question, an email, a phone call, or a Zoom that says, hey, can you help us get started? At least in the past 5 or 6 years or so, I bet there's at least 2 or 3 that had started this work before and are doing some type of reboot. And so this topic, Chad, of sustaining the work, I think is incredibly important. I mean, you dig into some of Doug Reeves' work where he talks about initiative fatigue. And anyone who's been in education for a while is like, oh my gosh, we start this stuff. How do we keep it going? you'll hear effective school leaders and educators talk about like, what's our big rocks?
Okay.
How do we, you know, focus our limited and precious professional development time to really help educators grow in the right areas? And so I think this topic today of sustaining grading reform is one that really can pay dividends for educators out there that are listening or watching to this. But I think, Chad, that there's a challenge, right? I mean, I've never talked with an educator who's like, you know what? We just don't have enough initiatives or changes going on around here. Usually it's quite the opposite. It seems like there's just so much flying down the pipe, whether it's, you know, state mandated things we have to do or other, you know, changes that school districts are making. Chad, why can't grading reform just be one more thing? I'm sure you've heard that phrase, Chad. Why can't grading reform just be one more thing?
Yeah, I think probably for the same reason, you don't want anything to be one more thing. You know, the teacher's capacity, the system's capacity to take systems for school improvement. And if we really think about grading as the purpose, as we talked about in other episodes, to communicate, it's a communication device about what a student can know or do related to some courses and content over a long period of time. If they've been in your school district or your school community for 12 or 13 years, it's really, really important, but it's part of a larger system. It doesn't just live in isolation. And so what's important about that is to think about what's the capacity for our staff to take on new learning that attaches onto, that bolts onto the successful levers we already have. And maybe some of them aren't so successful, but they work. We have these operating systems, these apparatus that seem to work. And schools are a little bit nuanced this way in terms of their community and their stakeholders and maybe technology, just how communication is working or not working. And then how does your grading reform just dovetail into that system? I think it's really important to do. If it's just yet another thing, I could speak as a former teacher who has implemented standards-based grading reform years ago, as I mentioned in episode one. It would totally feel like just an additive thing. I wouldn't naturally as a teacher understand the dovetailing effect that the grading reform has related to, say, PLCs and collaboration, or the curriculum work that we're doing around prioritizing standards, or even external communication like eligibility or the report card. You know, what's the connection there? I don't see it. And so things just, it's like someone said to me once, it feels like we're just falling down a staircase. One thing comes after the other, and I have no connection to it. And, you know, that hurts to fall down a staircase. And so in this era that we're in education, we need to, you know, be very cognizant of, you know, what's the cognitive load that we're putting onto our teacher and not burning them out as well. And so, I mean, there's a plethora of reasons right there alone, but it's so much broader than an initiative. It's really a way of thinking and a way of being in terms of your communication. So it wouldn't make sense for it to be a standalone initiative, and it won't be successful either. You know, have you seen that or experienced that? I'm sure you have. What is your advice to get yourself out of that?
Yeah. So I think like what you said is whatever the solid foundation that's in place is building upon that. Or if there's just something else right now that just has a lot of synergy, like you mentioned the PLC process. In my former school district, there was like no question really that we wanted to pursue this, you know, this collaborative teaming process of really doing, you know, guaranteed and viable curriculum stuff and looking at student, you know, common form assessments and things like that in collaborative teams. It's like no one was really saying like that was not good. Most for educators are saying like, why weren't we doing that before? And so I'll never forget the day where Jim, one of our high school teachers, was like, Matt, like, we're doing this PLC thing. We're doing the standards-based grading thing. Like, isn't there some like overlap between all this? So at that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, of course there is. Instead of trying to see these two things as being different, you know, how can we see them as just both going in the same direction and supporting each other? And so that's where Nathan Weir and I wrote our book, you know, Making Grades Matter, Standards-Based Grading and a Secondary PLC. And in the first chapter, there's a visual that, you know, kind of takes the big ideas of a professional learning community and does a crosswalk with some of the concepts of standards-based grading. And so I think that visual that Jim just like asked me to create for him that ended up in our book is something that as school leaders, we ought to be doing at all times. You know, another paper that I wrote recently, I think it was in 2025, was called Integrating Social Emotional Learning in Standards-Based Grading, Principles, Barriers, and Future Directions. It's published in the, for those of you that are in the SEL world, CASEL's prominent research journal called Social and Emotional Learning Research Policy and Practice. And so I think just, you know, trying to figure out ways to say, we're not just doing SEL over here and grading reform over here, or we're not just doing the PLC thing over here and grading reform over here, but these things support each other. And so when you're doing this work, you're also doing, you know, this other work as well to take some of that, you know, that perception of everything feeling like a puzzle that's not yet put together.
Yeah.
But Chad, I also know that it's easy to say that. It's not always easy to do that though in the midst of all of it. And so I just kind of feel like we have to put the pieces together for staff, but we also have to help support the heck out of them.
No doubt.
Even when the pieces aren't yet put together. What's your thoughts on, you know, is it one-on-one conversations with staff to make this happen in your perspective? Is it, you know, creating crosswalks like Matt explained? Like, what's been your experience to help staff see these things as one rather than many?
Yeah, I think one thing you can do, I mean, a lot of folks listening to this episode will be familiar with multi-tiered systems of supports for students, right? Like tier one, tier two, tier three, there's like universal expectations and universal instruction, and then building up towards more of a tier two and supporting those individuals just in timely specific cases, and then tier three pretty intensive. I think you have to think about building that same system for your adults. A former first grade teacher, Jessica Jones, and I wrote an article one time about supporting new teachers that way. And so I think we're going to talk about new teachers a little bit later in this episode, but just thinking about like programmatically, you don't have to hire more people. You just have to think about when it comes to grading and assessment reform, who's going to just go to our professional learning sessions or read an article and just get it, right? It's going to resonate with them. In fact, they may even become kind of a leader and talk through some examples with your colleagues. And then who's going to be like, it seems like they're doing great, and then they really stumble. And what are going to be those levels of support? Can't always be the administrators. Are you going to have PLC structures? Are you going to have mentors? Are you going to have instructional coaches? Are you going to have school counselors or other support staff really, really well trained from the implementation or that initiation phase to be able to have sustainable support so that that level is there when it's needed? Yeah. Just at the implementation originally at the onset, you're going to develop new problems all the time, right? And we hear this from schools all the time. And then intensive, like what could from a time intensity and from an availability, that's the other thing. It's like, how can we identify maybe that guiding coalition or that super small group of go-getters in our building? They're like, listen, we're your grading pastors. We'll come triage your situation. Doesn't matter. We teach third grade and you teach fifth. It doesn't matter that I teach algebra and you teach chemistry. We're on the case. If the coaches aren't available, if the principal's not available, if your collaborative team couldn't help, let us know, you know, hit this button, sort of like the back call, right? And that has been really successful. People feel really invigorated to have colleagues kind of come to the rescue. And there's always been teachers step up to the plate for that sort of tier three assistance when needed. And I've loved that idea. It also kind of weaves in examples from the trenches, right? Like nobody wants to hear me come into their classroom and say, well, what did you do in 2009 when you had something similar? I mean, it might help if it gets them kind of over a short-term problem, but really they want to know you're dealing with students that have cell phones. You're dealing with students who have attendance issues just like me right now, maybe even the same students. And so the fact that that level of support's available, those are some ideas I've seen that have worked really, really well. Just thinking about varying the amount of availability of support around grading and assessment, but also just the intensity of availability. And those can be stackable, of course. And then they can come and go as needed. And I feel like that just being thoughtful and mindful about how that system can be built out with all the people you have, basically at no cost, right? You're not bringing in some consultant flying in or driving in with a fancy briefcase and PowerPoint that only gets you so far and really maybe just get you started. Maybe you need a refresh every once in a while and some new ideas. But I think you have to build a system of support, as you've said. Mm-hmm. And you probably have that in place, maybe in your new teacher mentoring program or your onboarding program, or maybe not. But maybe you have in other places within your system that you can say, hey, let's just think about how we could leverage this dynamite idea as far as our structure, maybe in our grading and assessment implementation. I think you just have to be careful you don't burn out the same people all the time.
Yeah.
So you're tapping some shoulders and really, you know, lifting people up. Say, hey, is there any way that you, I mean, we've heard a lot of good things, or you've done some great work. Do you think you could jump on this task force for this year or do some sort of rotational basis? There's a lot of good ideas out there.
I think one thing I'd add, fantastic stuff, Chad. I really appreciate that you brought up the idea of tiers. One conversation I had, just actually two conversations I had this past week with some school leaders were like, the question that they were asking was a good one, but I tried to help them reframe it. The question was like, how do we know if our staff are ready to implement standards-based grading, or what percent of them are? Great question, because they're trying to figure out like how to move forward with this work. And I encourage them to say, hey, that's a great question. But instead of thinking about this idea of grading reform as a whole, break it down to smaller components. All right. How ready are we with high quality task neutral rubrics? How ready are we with awesome high quality summative assessments? How ready is our staff to implement reassessments at a high level? And so breaking down some of the big ideas of grading and assessment reform into smaller pieces, and then having some tool to actually get data, you know, think of it as like an implementation rubric for adults, and to find out, all right, let's think about this like we do with, you know, elementary literacy. Let's give everyone a screener just to find out where they're at tier one. And then let's provide with those experts that we have in-house that you're mentioning, Chad, let's use them to provide some tier two smaller group support, some follow-up support. Hey, these teachers need some additional help creating, you know, rubrics. All right, who do we have on staff that can help out with that, right? And then there's of course like a tier three, like, hey, you know, we've dipsticked, not the person's not the dipstick, all right? We've dipsticked with the instrument. As it turns out, you're not making progress on this component, this aspect of standards-based grading. We've given you additional support in small group setting. You're still not there yet. And so according to the data that we have, you're not there. So now maybe it's a one-on-one conversation, right? Between the administrator and that person, like, what support do you need? And if they're just like, you know, rah, I'm not doing it, then it turns into a evaluation conversation. But if they're just like, I just still don't understand this and I need, you know, extra time because I've got 7 preps and everybody else only has 2 preps. It, like, that's where like that tier three, very individualized support can come. And as I reframe that with these leaders, they're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Because sometimes in our brain, we think about like that one teacher or that one team or those 2 teachers and that two teams that just aren't ready. Yeah. But if we think about it like a multi-tiered system of support for standards-based grading implementation, now we're able to better sustain this over time because we've got an idea where everyone's at over the course of, let's say, a couple of years.
Yeah, and obviously to understand that people are always going to be in different places with.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, we want to promote that idea and understand that idea with our students. We can fully expect that our adults would be in the same boat. And so just thinking to be a little more agile, that's going to set you up really, really well for bringing on new people.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a big part of our work, right? Like, we're going to have people retire and people move and whatever the reason might be. We're an organization just like any other place in schools, and we're human resources driven. So one of the things that I can share that I've seen been really successful in schools that have led long-term sustainability is clearly their marketing that they are either standards-based. They're very proud of the fact they work. They have oftentimes a great website or some great informational items.
But putting it on the job posting.
Yeah, let's be really clear. Like, what other organization wouldn't do that? You know, if you're a construction site and you use only a certain kind of tools, like, you would probably advertise, hey, if you're going to work for us, these are the tools we use. Doesn't mean you couldn't work for us. It just means that might be a hurdle for you. You may not want to apply. And I think what's been really, really hard for schools is just with teacher shortages nationally in the last few years, just to feel leveraged. And I think that's, while super understandable, and I've been there, I think you really have to think about the long-term play for your students at getting people in, filling a spot or whatever, if it's not a perfect philosophical match to what it is that you really believe in, your core values, your core tenets, that grading purpose statement we talked about in episode one, it's just going to be short-lived anyway, and everybody's going to be kind of miserable. Now, we can coach people up, and we want to make sure we have a system to do that. And the thing of it is no matter what, even if philosophically you can sort of recruit and hire with people who have sort of a modern grading philosophy in mind, you're still going to need a lot of coaching. Because when we talk about those tiers of support, I like to think when we have those things in place, make sure we're working with those teams on understanding, are these teachers or are these teams needing technical support or like adaptive change support?
Yeah. Fantastic.
Because they just get all interwoven. Yeah. And that can be, I mean, there's people that will wrestle with an electronic gradebook so much so that they just want to throw everything out and start over. They're so fed up and they're so tired of dealing with just maybe the nuances of how it works, or maybe they're just not real techie as a person. And it's like all their frustrations being boiled up in technical considerations, technical problems. It's really limiting their ability to grow philosophically, you know, and adapt to the professional learning and changes that we've been doing. So kind of hand in glove is like, do your systems have agility to meet both technical and adaptive change?
Fantastic.
Right? At the same time.
Great point.
And then thinking about reaching out and making sure we're bringing on people that want to do the work that we do here. And I think sometimes when I've talked about that with teacher teams or with administrators mostly, is they sort of feel like, yeah, that sounds great, but you know, we really need a math teacher. And I really try to work with them and just go through the pros and cons and think about if you had someone who's truly staunchly just opposed to the work that you have really worked hard to do in your district or in your school, or you're in the midst of doing, just the detriment that can have on all the rest of the colleagues that they've joined. It just depends, you know? And so trying to ascertain in the interview process, you know, is this person coachable? I don't care how many years of experience do they have, but are they a coachable person?
Yep.
You know, and I think that's important because it represents characteristics that we're going to expect to want to see with our students when we're implementing more standards-based grading type evidence-based approaches. That's the exact same mentality they're going to have to turn around and have with our students, which is, no, we're not going to lower the bar. There's nothing you can do by turning in a whole bunch of stuff at the end of the grading period. What you have to know is what you have to know. And so, you know, it's sort of like this idea of, you know, if I'm coming in with that mindset about how I'm going to approach my work, it's going to be easier for me to translate that into the classroom as well. So that's sort of what comes to mind too, like schools that have just really been thoughtful about recruitment. And it's very easy to do, as you pointed out. Make sure you just put it in the job description, number one. You can't just put your mission and vision and your core values on a document. You know, people are applying for lots and lots of different jobs. But when you get the opportunity to connect or maybe call and set up an interview or something like that, and then certainly, of course, in the interview process, there's all kinds of different things you could do to ascertain, you know, the comfortability or knowledge base about, you know, those practices that you're seeking to enhance in your school. Have you come across any kind of onboarding or mentoring or even hiring practices that you've seen that are similar to that?
Yeah, I remember our hiring practices at our high school in Solon. We put on the job description. We'd say we used the phrase professional learning community, standards-based grading, and we were looking for people that were looking for those words. And we would not necessarily ask them about their experience verbatim, although I'm sure we did at some point interview, but we'd just try to discern, like, where are you at with this? And we're happy to teach you. We just want the dispositions in a staff member that's ready to get after it in that regard. So it's a fantastic thing. Also with those instruments I was mentioning earlier. By the way, like if you're listening or watching and you're like, Townsley, can we just get a copy or an example of one of those, you know, instruments? Send me an email, reach out on social media. Happy to share some of those tools with you to get you started. Not necessarily that they're the ones you want to use because you want to personalize them for your setting, but happy to share the ones that we used. And you're welcome to, you know, beg, borrow, steal as educators do. But we would use some of those instruments early on with our new teacher mentoring to more rapidly support these new teachers. Like, all right, what do you need support with? What components of our grading standards-based grading framework do you need more assistance with? And again, we had some fantastic, you know, people on staff that we just tap on the shoulder and say, hey, can you help this person with this or that? Sometimes an instructional coach, sometimes it was their mentor, just depends upon what that need was. With you 100%, Chad, with you 100%.
Yeah, this is good. Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Nope, go ahead.
It just made me think of something you and I have talked a lot about in recent years, certainly months, but in maybe years, I think we've talked about this. But I've been fascinated by the idea of generational differences in teachers.
Yep. Yeah.
And if
we're old now, Chad, we're old. We're the old. Yes. We're cut. Yeah. I mean,
we straddle the line.
All right. Fair enough.
So I feel like we're a real good hybrid when it comes to who we can, you know, take heat from or not. But, you know, when you're doing a lot of recruiting and onboarding of new staff, I mean, a lot of times they are new to the profession. They're not always new to the profession. They might be coming from another district with lots of experience, yep, so on and so forth, which still requires a great deal of support and mentoring, mind you. It's just a little bit different, perhaps. But what I've really noticed, and I've talked to lots of college campuses, done a lot of recruiting that way. And I just flat out ask them, you know, even if we didn't have an opening, and I just wanted to get to know kind of anecdotally, qualitatively, you know, unofficially, you know, let me take some notes here. And it was really heavy on support, like mentoring and support. And is there people I can ask? That was a big kind of theme. And another big theme was, you know, will I have an opportunity to lead? You know, can I be a part of this? Can I be a part of that? Right off the bat, which I thought was really neat. Now that's not always the case with previous generations when you get into, you know, boomers and X and so on and so forth, if you do some kind of generalized research about those groups. So that creates a dissonance between, you know, your teams when people come on boarded. But one of the things that since I know grading is big on, it's, you know, the big thing we're trying to work on is better communication, right? Like,
yep,
students know where they're at, parents know where they're at. You know, the teacher knows where the student's at in relation to, you know, hopefully some standards or some learning criteria. And so, you know, when you juxtapose those, we're bringing in a generation of folks who really don't always like to speak to people face to face, or on the phone, right? Like picking up and calling someone doesn't seem to be quite as native, right? I'm not trying to create everybody as a monolith here. But that's generally the feedback. And so one of the things that I developed for a couple of schools, actually for the UNI standards-based grading conference I got to present at last year on a session of onboarding new staff, is just a quick script that you could provide to common grading questions you're going to get asked here. Because in the first couple of months, you might not have the levels of intensity set up to support all the grading and assessment questions that a new teacher has.
Grading reform is a long-term shift, not a one-time program. As you listen to Matt and Chad unpack what works, here's a practical question. Where does the evidence of student learning actually live in your district? Spaces EDU is a digital portfolio and proficiency-based assessment platform that helps districts make learning visible. Students collect authentic evidence, align it to standards or competencies, and reflect on their growth over time. If your grading system is changing, the way you capture learning has to change too. Explore how at spacesedu.com/grading.
And so I created this little script that are like, hey, these are the common questions they're going to ask. Nice. And these are the common terms that we use to respond. And if you know you're having a call coming up or even a visit, if you want me to help model it for you, this is the old Todd Whitaker principle, right? I'll do that, or I can have a colleague sit in with you and kind of model it. They're going to have a conversation and you can hear how they use the terminology. And you know that I think language is super important, right? I think the words that we use really, really matter. And so we want to make sure that we're starting to use the language of our organization, of our school, right away from the beginning. We don't want to unfurl talking about points and losing points and percentages and all that, when really what they meant is, they're not at the level of learning, for example. And so they might have 1 year of parent emails and phone calls that where they use the wrong terminology. And what does that do to the whole system? I mean, it's kind of like a slow leak to the boat. So we could have prevented that. So if somebody wants to see that script, it's generic enough for you to adapt it in Google Docs, shoot me an email. I'm happy to share it with you. But those are just, that was just an idea we came up kind of on the fly of like, hey, we need to make sure. And what was fun about that is that we were able to collaborate to develop that in our school and say, is everybody who's already here use that same language and terminology?
Nice.
Agree why we would do that. Let's check on our grading principles. Let's check on our purpose statement. Why would we use the term evidence, for example, versus points? Why would we use the term practice instead of homework, maybe? You know, and so working through those things, I love to include that in onboarding. And I think new employees have found it pretty helpful as well.
You know, as we, fantastic stuff, Chad. As we continue our conversation on sustaining grading reform, one thing that I just got to talk about, we just have to talk about together, is this idea of it's not just good enough to know all the right answers about grading and assessment reform. There's also this aspect of implementation science, change leadership, change management, whatever you want to call it. Yep. And as I read the headlines of schools that are, you know, maybe not where they want to be, the fires are exploding in their school district, those news headlines, it's not often, and I shouldn't say it, it's not always about the actual grading ideas. Often it's about the way that it was rolled out.
Yeah.
The pace of implementation. And the phrase I use in presentations I do is don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, metaphorically speaking. It's not necessarily that the ideas are bad. It's just the way it's being rolled out. And so I think the remedy, if you will, for that is to really lean into change leadership frameworks. And so John Cotter's one comes from the business world. He talks, he's got this multiple step framework. One of the ideas I think that those listening or watching to this podcast episode should know about is just the idea of establishing a guiding coalition. I hope you've heard, you know, Chad, you and I have talked about doing this work together, not just in isolation. So school leaders listening or watching, establish that guiding coalition, you know, create that grading purpose statement together. Yes. Don't go in your office and just write one up and present it as written in stone the next day. There's so many things that we've talked about in this podcast series that should be done with that grading leadership team, guiding coalition that we've both talked about. I know you're also a big Michael Fullan fan though, Chad. So I just want to make sure you get a chance to give a shout out to some of Michael Fullan's stuff within this part of our conversation.
Well, of course, I'm a junkie for all school leadership, and I really appreciate the work of just great leadership gurus out there in general, whether it be John Maxwell or others. You know, I think we can all appreciate that application to our work. Michael Fullan being, you know, certainly a preeminent author and researcher in school leadership. I've always appreciated, and I talked about this in other episodes, his thoughts and attention to coherence and alignment. We started this episode about systems, right? Like thinking about systems change. And what comes to my mind all the time is this idea of clarity. Like, why are we doing this? And so I always cringe a little bit when I'm working with schools or taking emails or phone calls or just in my day-to-day job, and people are like, really stuck in the mechanics of the work. Well, you can't do that, or you can do this, or you're not supposed to do X, Y, Z. And it's like, well, let's take like 10 steps back. You know what the mission of our school is to do? You know, what's the vision that we have for our kids? Does that even make sense that you would do that? And, you know, that's not reasonable to think that everybody would be working through their day to day and all the thousands of decisions that teachers have to make with that lens. But I think we do always have to reground ourselves in coherence to the work that we do. We got to check ourselves. And with grading and assessment reform, particularly with grading reform, that needs to be tied back in. You know, you need to have a system and process for asking those clarifying questions to get really clear about the practices that we do, that why, how, what, inside out approach. And I like to, I don't know, you kind of Fullanize it to school leaders sometimes to just say, like, could you really think about 4 C's with your questions, with your teachers, excuse me, and their questions?
I'm digging it.
So here it is, like 4 C's. It's just sometimes these things are easier to remember this way. This would be a way to like Fullanize, so to speak, your grading approach for school leaders to increase that clarity and coherence. One is ask yourself, are we doing everything we need to do to build capacity in the teachers we have? We obviously want to recruit and retain great folks. And when we have them, are we increasing their capacity? Do we have opportunities for leadership and to learn? That professional development piece is huge. It can't just be done in August. And I argue this all the time. We don't have even 9 months with our educators when it comes to professional learning and planning for professional learning. We don't. August is a blur. Our minds are in lots of different places. It's an exciting time. Mid-year is sort of a lull and you're kind of getting worn down. And so it's like if you start subtracting out all of those things and like the end of the year is the end of the year and you don't have the summer, I mean, what does that leave us with? And so we have to find ways to build capacity when we have our teachers with us and really lift up their own professional learning to be able to do this work. So really thinking about that is super important. And how do you answer that question? I think that's something we've got to work through. First C, capacity. Second C, collaboration. So I can kind of answer the first by being better at the second, which is we've already talked about collaboration through a task force or a guiding coalition. You know, get a team within your building. It doesn't have to be big, and you can be on it as the school leader.
Heck yeah.
You should be on it. You don't have to be on it, but you can, and make sure it's really diverse in terms of Anthony Muhammad talks about like fundamentalists, like I'm not changing, and people that are rock stars, like I got this, I could lead this, I could write a book on it, and everybody in between, but also diversity in terms of roles too. I think it's really, really important to see all the different lenses of the beach ball when it comes to grading in your building. School counselors, special education, ELL, every content that you can. You got to be small enough to be nimble, but you got to be big enough to be diverse. And that's something to think about. So you build capacity, you use collaborative structures to make sure you can sustain that capacity of learning at various different levels. And then, of course, like I mentioned before, the third C is improve clarity. What are we trying to do here? What's our mission and vision? What is our goal? What are our goals this year? And how is grading and assessment going to help us do that? Okay, make sure we've tied that link for our staff. And then lastly, coherence, right? Our friend Mike Schmoker calls that focus. How do we bring coherence and those systems come working together? And you know what you're going to find out in that fourth question a lot as you start to ask yourself difficult questions as school leaders is it's not coherent. This works against us over here. It's the fourth question. When you get better in the first three C's, you start building more teacher capacity. They start reading more articles. They start reading more books. They start bringing things to light that you've never thought of originally in the implementation. They really dive into the collaboration. They're doing some inter-rater reliability. They're developing common scoring criteria on their own. We're really lifting it up. People are getting a little bit more clear about what we're trying to do. And while they bring more clarity, the higher we turn the lights up, the more things we see left in the kind of crevices in the corners of the room that we didn't think about. And that's actually a good thing, but we have to think about coherence. And that means that we might have to cut some of those things and let them go, right? Who's that? Peter Drucker, right? Add one thing, take one thing away. And so you got to have some vulnerability as a leader or a leadership team to say, hey, we're seeing that through our first three C's that there are some things that are getting in the way of this work, of the reform and the grading work we want to do. Maybe we need to let that go. That's holding us back. So again, think back to our last episodes. If that thing is our tradition, make sure we're replacing it with another new one that people can be on board with. And that comes from, of course, our friend Tom Guskey.
Love it. One more thing, Chad, one more thing before we wrap this topic. All right. So McCrell's balanced leadership, not necessarily new, but I love it. All right. So So this idea of like first order change versus second order change is a part of their framework. And I just want to hopefully assume that anyone that's listening or watching here knows that this work of grading reform is second order. What I mean by that is you used the phrase earlier, it's not just a technical change, but there's some other stuff to it. Yep. If we're just talking about changing the bell schedule, you know, used to start at 7:55 a.m., now we're starting at 7:57 a.m., that's a technical change, just changing things by 2 minutes. No one really has to kind of, you know, reframe their mind a whole lot. It's just a small little change I can change by 2 minutes type of thing. But in grading and assessment reform, we're often talking about not just changing the way the grade book looks, but we're changing how we think about what the purpose of school is sometimes, right? Not just compliance anymore, but it's more about learning. It's not just I taught it. It's did they learn it? It's not about just points. It's about proficiency. It's not about how much did they earn. It's how much did they learn? Like all of those, you know, juxtapositions out there that go along with grading reform. And so it's a philosophical change as well. And so because it is both a technical and philosophical change for many, not all,
right?
By nature of it, it is what McCrell would call a second order change. And so what's that mean for those that are listening or watching? It just means that we have to be ready for an implementation dip. Like things are going to get worse for a while before they get better. Yeah. And so as a result of that, we got to be ready to support people. We got to stay positive. I mean, there's all kinds of other great stuff that McCrell talks about in the midst of second order change. People are going to feel, some people are going to feel like it's just chaos, like what's going on around here? Mm-hmm. And so as leaders, we have to constantly be messaging. We can never over communicate. You just can't communicate enough about what we're doing and why we're doing it. And so again, I get just like takes us back to episode one, right? Like why do we even have that grading purpose statement to begin with? It's to be our North Star about, you know, the purpose of grades is to communicate, not just to compensate or to sort students, for example. And so consistently going back to that grading purpose statement as a means of creating some level of order is just one way to help work through that implementation dip. So I guess maybe our message here is there's a lot of different kind of change management frameworks out there to think about. Don't lose track of those. Go back to your change management textbooks, articles that you read in graduate school. Reach out to those school leaders around you that just seem to have a good knack for leading change. Because even if they don't know everything about grading reform, there's probably something that you can learn from people like Michael Follin, right? McCrell, Cotter, others that just have, you know, they're on the Mount Rushmore, if you will, of what it means to help an organization change in a real positive and, dare I say, way that's sustaining the work, which is the theme of our episode today.
Yeah, and it might be a good time for us to, we haven't really talked about AI much in these episodes, to be honest with you. And like, this is an avenue unexplored for me because I haven't actually done this in a school yet or even talk to anybody that has, but it seems to me this would be a great opportunity for you as you're some point in the journey of grading reform and you're running into some sticking points that you maybe didn't anticipate. So just kind of in a closed loop way or anonymous way, even, you know, have a chat with an AI tool of your preference and say, you know, considering these change frameworks.
Yeah.
Can you suggest some reasons why and maybe some opportunities to overcome based on the context of the given situation? I've been thinking about that a lot as just an opportunity to not do the work for you, but really start you on second base, right?
Yeah.
I think a lot of the reasons why schools haven't been able to sustain the implementation dip or the fatigue is because they haven't been able to have the agility to support their teams, to support their families. And it became sort of a lobbying of the volleyball back and forth, and someone eventually had to go do something else. It's not that they didn't want to keep the active conversation going, but something else changed. Something else took our attention. And so we can predict that's going to happen, which is why we often talk about this idea of distributing the leadership of the, and then also, you know, the reality too is, Matt, and I hate to talk about this, but I think statistics are the only thing that we can live upon, which is administrators aren't staying around in one role for as long as they once were. And so what does that mean? Well, if you don't want initiative to fatigue in your school, then we don't want to tie programs with people and philosophies with people. And we really want to tie it to our purpose. Like, what do we stand for here? The managers can come and go. They can be big lifters. They certainly can be a part of supporting those different tiers of support, different levels of expertise. All those things can be great and true and enhancing. But when everything rises and falls with one person, I think the teachers feel it, the students feel it, and of course the families do too. And there's really a lot caught in the wash there. It didn't have to be.
Yep, for sure, for sure, for sure. I think, yeah, just a great reminder, Chad, that when we do this work well, if it's really sustained over time, it's not going to be connected to one specific person, because there's been an intentional effort by leaders in the system to build capacity such that it's not one person's grading reform framework. It's just the best way we're going to do it. It's the way we're going to communicate learning to students. So thanks for highlighting that.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. I've never asked you this question before, but I want to ask you now as we kind of wrap up our mini series. Why would you do it? Why would you initiate the change? Why would you develop some research within your school or your organization or your district in 2026 or beyond to say, you know, now's the time? There seems to be, and we've addressed those. We've tried to be as honest and transparent about what they've been in the past, those barriers, those political, social, maybe economical things that are in your way that prevent you from lots of different reform and change that you think is best. But if I had to ask you, Matt Townsley, you know, why would you still move forward today as a school leader or just as an educator in general? What would you say to that person?
Yeah, I think because grades themselves mean something. They've always meant something. They will continue to mean something. And so it's incredibly important to get it right. Not just for the sake of grades, though, Chad. This is where it might be a surprising answer here for you. But because I've seen so many other changes not take root until grades get better. Let me just give you a quick example, right? We can talk about guaranteed and viable curriculum all day long. All day long. I've been at school. I visited schools where they've got all the standards prioritized and they've got all the assessments written, all the things, but it's just sitting in a Google folder somewhere. But now if we're going to actually have to teach, assess, and report out where students are at, now all of that guaranteed and viable curriculum stuff comes alive. Mm. I've been at schools that say, we want to personalize learning. And they're like, but we're still, you know, handing out 100 points for this project. And kids are like, it's not very personalized, right? So if we're really going to be able to do all these other things, grading reform becomes a launch pad to really doing those other things better, or dare I say, even accomplishing those aims. And so it's almost like the linchpin, if you will, to help schools get even better at whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
And I know that might seem kind of crazy and backwards, but you know, the dreamers that I talk with, the people who really want to help school get better, they're talking about personalizing learning. They're talking about CompC-based education. They're talking about, you know, all kinds of other, you know, high reliability schools framework, all kinds of stuff. But if we don't get grading right, none of that stuff really, it's like the plane just stays in the airport. It's just there. It's landed. It never actually took off until grades do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah. And one thing I would add to that, thanks for that, because I think you said it really, really well. I would add the relational aspect of school. I mentioned this to a common friend that you and I have, Jim Wishman. And on a recent podcast, in fact, Forward Ed Network. Check it out. With Adam Bush there as well, we're in the belonging business at school. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you didn't know anything about Maslow's hierarchy of needs and you really think about it, I know that can sound like, oh my gosh, here we go again. But we have a great opportunity and responsibility to make sure that kids feel like school is a place where we can learn. And in order to do that, you got to have coherence around systems like grading and assessment, for example. You were just talking about this. that don't go opposite of what you're trying to build, which is relational capacity, 21st century learners, great communicators, problem solvers, critical thinkers. Yet everything's just kind of black or white. You either got it right or you got it wrong. And certainly there are right and wrong answers. I'm not alluding to that. But in terms of feedback and having conversations and iterative thinking and failing forward and being able to do that, you got to have a grading system that's going to allow you to do that. So often we hear, we want kids to be able to do this. And we want kids to be able to do this. Yet over here, we have a 20th century system of grading and reporting that actually prevents them from doing that.
Fair.
And that's that coherence piece, again, coming back to the full and eyes approach I was mentioning and you alluded to so beautifully as well. Well, Matt, obviously, it's a treat. Just being the great privilege of calling you a friend is a treat. And I'm honored to be able to get to do that and pick up the phone anytime I want and text or call you or have a Zoom. And of course, to get to do things professionally with you is a great blessing as well. We hope, of course, that this series of four episodes have kind of been fun and also provocative for you as a school leader, or educator, or maybe just as a interested listener in the grading journey and how things have been in the last 20 years. It's been interesting, but it's been great. And we're excited about it more now than ever. Matt, take us back through the four episodes and kind of put a wrap on this.
Yeah, that first episode was really fun. We took a real, you know, maybe 50,000 foot view and looked at the state of grading reform, where it's been, where it's going, why it's still important today. So that was kind of really a fun episode to do. If you're listening, if you happen to be listening to this one right now, you're on episode four. Go back to episode one and get the big picture perspective there. Episode two was one I think that you and I have talked a lot about.
Yeah,
which is getting started. You know, all right, you're listening, you're watching. Like, how do we get started? How do we get started the right way? And so we talk about things like grading purpose statements and things like that, and getting a good foundation of grading policies in place, and you know, to tap into some of the stuff we talked about today, doing that with other educators in the system through a guiding coalition. Mm-hmm. The third episode was one that I know that you and I were really itching to talk about because of our book, which is communicating with stakeholders. I think that there's a ton of great books out there. I shouldn't say a ton. I think there's a few good grade book, really good grading reform books out there, but even the really good ones I wrote one of them, just talk just a tiny bit on how to communicate with parents. And so you and I said, we're going to do this. We're going to write the book to help help parents really understand all of this work. And so we kind of took our listeners backwards and said, what do you need to know when communicating with parents? And so whether it's parents, school board members, or others, community members, that's what episode three was all about, communicating without drama. That was probably an episode we've talked a lot about the most recently, Chad. And of course, this one, sustaining. I think it's one that you and I have talked little bits and pieces about over the years, but we've talked more about maybe in the past couple months, perhaps. Mm-hmm. And so it was really fun to kind of put those pieces together for me and for our listeners here today. Chad, it's been fun. I hope that our listeners feel comfortable reaching out, whether it's on social media or via email, whether it's to get some example we talked about today or in one of the episodes, or just to set up a meeting to talk more about this. That's part of, we love talking to each other, but we also love talking to other educators from around the country and around the world as well. So Chad, wrap us up. It has been fun. We've, you know, put our sweatshirts on, cozied up here in early 2026 to have some recorded conversations. Wrap us up if you would.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks a lot for taking us through those recaps of the episodes. You can jump right on to Forward Ed. You can jump on to YouTube. You can check out any of those episodes in any order. But we're glad that you're here with us, no doubt, on this one. We love to have the opportunity to interact with folks and have great conversations. And one of the things we probably love more than anything is if people reach out and they have a specific question or maybe a philosophical question, is to point them in the direction of someone else that we learn from and maybe a resource. It could be a video or an article, a podcast. Both Matt and I are pretty passionate about curating all those resources. Matt's done a wonderful job on his website, and many, many people know about that over the last few years. And so I'll let him talk about that. You can check out previous podcasts that I've done, either as a guest or a host on recalibrateedservices.com. You're welcome to follow me on LinkedIn, just Chad Lang there, and you'll see my picture. I'm happy to connect that way. And if there's anything we can do for listeners or fun collaborations, we'd be happy to do that. I don't want to speak for Matt, but I, on behalf of myself, thank you so much for following along. Thanks for doing everything that you do for kids. It's a great, noble profession. We need to continue to keep that at the forefront of our minds. Matt, how can folks reach out to you for all the wonderful expertise and resources you can provide?
Yeah, probably the best way is just to hop on Google and type in the phrase, all things standards-based grading. All things standards-based grading. I'll take you to my website. Great curated resources on there. Reading lists, podcasts, examples, blog posts, links to some of Chad's stuff, links to all kinds of people's stuff on there. All things standards-based grading will take you to my curated website there as well. And reach out. Happy to help.
Well, thanks, Matt, for that. Again, thank you to our sponsors, Curriculum Leadership Institute, our friends over at Spaces EDU, awesome platform they got going there. And of course, all of our friends over at Forward Ed for putting together this podcast series. You can check out their great work and other podcasts they have at Forward Ed. And again, if you need anything, please reach out. We wish you the best and thank you for listening.
Thanks for spending time in the comments on the Forward Ed Network. You've been listening to Modern Grading Reform, a miniseries with Dr. Chad Lang and Dr. Matt Townsley. Honest conversations, practical insights, and better communication about learning. Join us for the next episode and find even more on the Forward Ed Network.